Hey everybody, this is Chad from TortureCast, and last night before the Brewers faced the Giants, I was able to sit down with Marty Lurie, the KNBR pre- and post-game host on the weekends, and he is just a fantastic fountain of knowledge. I've always been a big fan of his, so he unfortunately was impacted by the Bay Bridge closure last night, so it took him over 2 hours to cross the bridge, but when he did get there, he didn't cancel on me. He called me up, and he invited me up to the press dining room, so we did the interview there. There is a little bit of background noise that I've been able to lower somewhat, but I believe you can still hear us both just fine. So I really do hope you enjoy this interview. I know I did, despite how nervous I was. But also, after the game, we recorded our bonus-sode after we covered the game from the press box. So me, Willie, Ben, Allie, and Jen all got together at Zeke's to record that. So check that episode out as well as we move forward with this disappointing Giants season. But it doesn't mean we won't stop being fans. Hope you enjoy it.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants, this is TortureCast.
Hey everybody, welcome to the TortureCast. This is Chad, and we are coming to you live from AT&T Park. Right before the Giants, actually, first pitch probably just went off between the Milwaukee Brewers and the San Francisco Giants, and we have a special guest tonight. You may know him from his pre- and post-game shows for KNBR and the San Francisco Giants, and I definitely think that this man has more baseball knowledge in his right pinky than I do in my entire body, but Marty Lurie is here. Marty, thank you for being with us tonight.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, and you have a very nice website, I want to tell you. Very good.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Good. So, you know, again, thank you for taking the time. I know that the Bay Bridge was a little bit impacted tonight, so you had an issue coming across the bridge, so I really appreciate you making the time, even despite the traffic in your busy schedule.
Yeah, only 2 hours from Emeryville.
That only 2 hours. Extra time there to spend in the car. So, as some of our listeners may know, that you were a criminal defense attorney, criminal law attorney, for 25 years, and now, you've been in the sports, I guess, journalism, talk show business for 15 years or so?
Well, since 1996.
1996?
Yeah,
okay.
So we're going on about 17, 18 years now.
Wow. So can you recap just briefly for our listeners, what was the genesis for that? What was the precedence for that?
Sure. Well, I practiced criminal law for this 25-year period. I was a trial lawyer. And during my whole life, really before that, I studied baseball just as fun. It was an unconditional friend. I liked it. I remembered things that I would read and talk about, baseball cards and all that, but it was always my friend in life. So when I left law in 95, I said, gee, people said you ought to try baseball on the radio. I said, really? And they said, sure. And so I went to a little station in El Cerrito and said I want to try a half-hour show talking about baseball on the radio. And this was the beginning of ESPN radio and things like that. And I said, you know, I can do that. I can do something like that. So they gave me a chance to come in on a Wednesday and do a half-hour show. And I worried about it. I said, well, how am I ever going to talk for a half hour on the radio? And then I realized I'm a lawyer, and lawyers can talk. And they can talk about nothing for a long period of time. So I went in, and the adrenaline rush of being on the radio and talking about something I loved and somehow I knew something about was really the equivalent of being in a courtroom. And I really enjoyed it, and people liked it, because what I could do, what baseball is, it connects generations. Mm-hmm. It connects people with their grandparents, uncles, aunts, siblings, and friends 20, 30, 40 years ago, and it lives on. It builds every year. I could go back and tell you what happened in 1960, and I could tell you what's going to happen tonight. So by pulling that together for the generations, people liked it, and that was the genesis of the show that progressed and progressed until I joined the KNBR with the Giants in 2010. Right. So for the first 15 years of this thing, or 14 years, whatever it was, I was on before the A's pregame. on various stations. The thing to remember is it's always been my own show.
Yeah.
I produce it, I buy the time, I sell the time, I book the guests, and I just very recently have a couple of additions to the show to help me, but basically it's been my show.
Yeah, so I've just learned that recently, that you really are in full control. This is your show.
Yes, it is.
So you say what goes. You get the interviews, you sell the advertising, you do all that stuff.
Yeah, it's amazing to do it, and I'm very proud of it. I look back on it, I can't believe I've done it. But as I tell people, the skills of being a businessman and being a lawyer and showing up on time and presenting cases and paying your bills and dressing properly and playing well with others and learning how to read and write and communicate that I did as a lawyer transferred into this thing. So as I did this, but I had to learn how to interview people in baseball. And as a lawyer, you want to listen. You never want to ask closed-ended questions because you want people to talk, unless it's your client and you don't want them to say too much. But... In this thing,
distinction there.
With the baseball players, you want to say, why did you do this? How did you get in the game? What was life like for you growing up? Who was your favorite teammate? So it's a lot of questions that allow them to talk. And that's what I brought to this from being a lawyer, and that was my distinction.
Speaking of growing up, according to your bio, you attended your first baseball game at Ebbets Field in 1954.
That's what we say. That's what I remember.
That's what you remember.
That's what I remember. And it was a, you know, game probably against the Pirates or the Cardinals and things like that. But, yeah, it was an amazing moment for me because I lived at a time before color TV. And, of course, we had baseball cards and we had pictures of the field and all that. But to walk out through those, and you know this, when you get to a ballpark, to walk out through that open door and see a ball field with the green grass and the signs in the outfield and the white bases, and to see your hometown team, the Brooklyn Dodgers, in life, it was the most incredible experience of my life, and I'll never forget it.
It's interesting how that transcends generations, because even though I did grow up in the era of color TV, I still remember attending my first Giants game. Granted, it was at Candlestick Park in the late 70s, but I do remember coming up the tunnel and seeing that seemingly enormous field. It looked larger than life, way larger than it did on television. And it's just amazing, because that's something that doesn't change, I would say, from generation to generation. From your first experience of going to a game, so that's pretty incredible. So, I think it was yesterday, actually. I just played a game, and I was coming home from the game, and I heard you with Vita Blue and Bill Lasky talking about what you think the biggest difference is between players of yesterday and today, and I think you were talking about defense.
Yes.
And so can you elaborate a little bit about that?
Sure. Thank you for listening to that. I enjoyed that show a lot with them. Every night you watch the defensive highlights. Now, it used to be the home runs. Remember the home run? They'd have that ball screaming as a home run going down the park.
Yeah.
Not anymore, really. You see them, but not with the...
web gems.
Yeah, not with the publicity that they gave it. Now they highlight the defensive plays of the night. And these defensive plays for me, to watch a shortstop go in the hole and throw a ball from the foul line to first base, to watch outfielders diving in the outfield, to watch incredible throws, I never saw that when I was growing up, or even 20 years ago. The defense today is so fast and so spectacular that it stands out to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So, obviously, you followed this game for quite a long time. And today, just today, Major League Baseball handed down 50-game suspensions for a dozen players involved in the Biogenesis scandal. And, of course, 211 games for A-Rod. So, given the fact that Major League Baseball hasn't actually caught these guys with their supposed hard testing and effective testing, this is essentially handed to them by an ex-employee of Biogenesis. Do you think the 50-game suspensions are sufficient? Or do you think it should be some more severe? What can Major League Baseball even do about this situation, considering these guys can take patches of testosterone that gets out of their system in 8 hours?
It's going to be this way forever, because there's always someone that has a guy who could beat the system. And that's the way life works. I don't care if you're a baseball player, you're a lawyer, you're an accountant, you're a musician, whatever it is, there's always people looking for an edge. And that's what we have in baseball. This goes beyond the collective bargaining agreement or the joint drug program. These penalties are being issued, and you're right, they've never been caught. But there's evidence outside of the agreement that is credible evidence that leads people to believe that these crimes were committed. And under the uniform standard contract, if you have things happen which are detrimental to baseball, baseball can impose a penalty on you. So they're choosing the 50 games, the equivalent of the first-time drug offense for these people. So that's how they come up with the 50. For A-Rod, I think he becomes sort of a poster boy for what's wrong with PEDs, and that he has sort of flaunted, just put his nose up in the air throughout his career. And there's been this case and that case, but they've never caught him, as you say. Well, in this one, they have enough hard evidence to prove that he was involved with this clinic. So they're taking all their frustration from the last 5 or 6 or 7 years out against him in this case, and they're giving him the most severe penalty I think they can, which is 211 games. So it's beyond the agreement, but Bud Selig has the right, like a Pete Rose, banning him from baseball for conduct detrimental to baseball, and that's what's happening here. It's interesting to me that the players are very much in favor of this. And I think at this point, everyone wants this to be behind us and get the game back to the pristine way it was. Well, it was never pristine.
No.
They used amphetamines. They used all sorts of elixirs. You go back to the 1800s, they used all sorts of strange elixirs to help them play. So it'll never be perfect. But the records of baseball are so sacrosanct that we want them to exist forever. And that's why it's important to do this, so we can have the generations that say Ty Cobb hit 400 in 1908. Rogers Hornsby was the greatest right-handed hitter at 424. Ted Williams hit 406. Ruth at 60 homers. Maris at 61. We don't want the records obliterated because we love the records by someone who's so-called cheating.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because I often hear from friends and family that, well, you know, today they have masseuses and chiropractors and supplements and all these legal things.
Yeah.
And they didn't have those back in the 20s and the 30s and the 40s. And yeah, that's true. But again, it's apples to apples. All the players have access to that these days. And back then they didn't. So you still can compare the era within the era. But you do have the people who are cheating, in a sense, with the PEDs. So guys like A-Rod, maybe he wouldn't have been voted in the Hall of Fame regardless of this recent suspension. But guys like him and Bonds and Sosa and McGuire, do you think any of them even have a reasonable shot getting into the Hall in the next 10, 20 years?
Probably not, because the attitude against them is what you just described. Even though life is different today, in 1908, they didn't have airplanes. And today we have airplanes, but we'll still argue who's a better hitter, Ty Cobb or Pete Rose. They used one ball the whole game. The bats were different. We want to maintain that purity, even if it's not really purity. The Hall of Fame is our only salvation as fans to say we want it to be as good as it can be. And why should we lower our standards to bring in people who are involved in this?
Yeah.
So I don't think they will be. Now, the argument is the Hall of Fame a museum or is it Valhalla? Is it that one place in even this crazy world we live in where we try to believe that things are pure? Is it that great place in the sky that we all aspire to go to? Is it heaven? And I think as baseball fans, we want it to be heaven. And that's why I think we'll probably, the writers and everyone else, will keep these people out. Now, some may get in, like a Bonds or a Clemens, because their achievements were so enormous, even before this, that somehow over the years, I think they'll wear down the opponents. But for the ones that are on the borderline or really had 6 or 7 years all of a sudden because of this, I don't think they're going to get in.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's unfortunate. I did view...
Yes, sir. I need to talk.
Oh, yeah. Right back.
Okay.
I did view it as Valhalla as a child, unfortunately.
Yes, and we still
and
think of it like
that. And that image has been shattered,
we
really,
we still think of it like that, that we want it to be the one place in our lives that we could look up to and believe in it.
Yeah.
Even though it may be like believing in Fantasyland or the Easter Bunny, we still want to believe it's as pure as anything we've ever had.
Well, I visited the Hall of Fame in 1995 before all this went down. I mean, it was going on at the time, but unknown to me as a 21-year-old. And that really was Mecca for me. I mean, it was an unbelievable
It still
experience.
Is. And one other thing about the Hall of Fame. Someone, a very wise man, once said, if the players could climb down from their plaques and walk amongst us and play the game, Grover Cleveland Alexander would be a better pitcher drunk than he would be sober. And that's the truth. If they came off their plaques, they would be as ornery, as anyone we've ever met.
They're talking about Babe Ruth and his drinking issues and Mickey Mantle and those guys. Absolutely.
Mantle had the greatest line. He said, if I would have known the stats were so important, I would have stopped drinking. Yeah.
Maybe wouldn't have his liver issues.
Yeah, that's right.
So in this day and age, here we are in 2013, it seems like most sports talk hosts have a shtick. They have something. They have go-to lines. They have whatever. I myself consider myself more of a baseball purist, and I've certainly respected the way you've handled yourself over the years. You don't have that, I don't mean to demean others, yeah, but that phoniness, that shtick. You have a very calm demeanor. You're very intelligent, very verbose, very eloquent. What do you think sets you apart from other radio hosts who feel like maybe they have to have that? They almost like they have to fill a niche. Yeah. To fill a gap, maybe something they don't have that you do. I mean, do you think that's part of it?
Two things. One, I respect the game. And when I get on the air and talk about it, I want to respect the game and do what I think the game deserves. So that's one thing. Second thing is I'm on the weekends. And the weekends, it's easier to talk about baseball. People are on their lawns. They're in the backyard. They're, as you say, driving. There, Tito Fuentes came in just a couple of minutes because he heard me all day yesterday driving back from Reno, and he heard the show with Bill and Vida. People are cooking, they're visiting people, and they want to be part of the game in a relaxed way. And that's what baseball is for me. So I think I respect the game, and I think my time slot helps. And also I think everyone has the right to their opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And when people call in, if they want to say what they want to say, if they want to talk for 2 minutes, so be it. They love the game. Let them talk.
Well, that's one of the things that you do. You, even the people who are far out on either end of the spectrum, you let them have their time.
Yes, I do.
As opposed to other hosts who may say goodbye, cut them off, flush them, whatever. So I really do respect that in the sense that you give them their time because it's a weekend show and guys have to say what they have to say and the audience can make their own judgment.
Correct. Now, Salty from Clovis is,
Salty.
Is another story.
He's another story.
We've got to deal with him. And
he's a legacy. Yeah.
Let's say you got to make 2 points. What's your first one? Then he makes a second one. And then when he says one more thing, I said one more thing, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Yeah.
All right, so about the Giants. Tonight, here we are. We're in the second inning here. The Giants are sitting at 49-61, 12 games under 500, and unfortunately 11 games behind the Dodgers. This also may be the worst title defense ever, aside from the 98 Marlins, which you kind of don't count because of their fire sale. Do you think one disappointment can explain this mediocrity this year, or do you think it's kind of an even distribution of several factors?
Well, I think it's underachieving by a number of players that they counted on. That's number one. And number two, I think they had some significant injuries that affected the lineup. But I think it's also the league got a little better, and they didn't get better with them. And I just think it's a year of some underachieving by some people on the pitching staff, some people in the bullpen, a number of the hitters. And that's, as I say on the show, that's baseball. It goes like this, and then you retool. And I think the fact they've won 2 of 3 World Series is very exciting for them, and they sort of maybe are a little bit hesitant to panic and redo the team this year when they're still enjoying sellouts every night.
I think what you say about it's baseball is really apparent, not only because of the downside this year, but because of the upside in years past. For example, in 2010, the Giants were 6.5 back of the Padres on August 25th.
I mean,
we're talking about 2 or 3 weeks from now, they were still 6.5 back. And yet, it took a 10-game losing streak by the Padres and a hot streak by the Giants. You had the 2012 season where they had 6 elimination games, or again, any one of those games would have ended their World Series run. So it almost seems like, I'm not going to say karma, and I don't necessarily believe that,
sure,
but it is baseball. Things happen for your favor with random chance and against your favor with random chance, and I think that's what they're seeing this year.
Well, also, as you point out, this is not a ball club that ran away from anybody, so they have little margin for error. And this year they've made a lot of defensive errors. They haven't hit with runners in scoring position. And they don't have a safety net of guys who can just come in and pitch and hit if a few are having poor seasons. So I think that's the other point of it, as you point out. They had to come from far back to win. So it's not a great, great team. They live on their pitching. And this year their pitching didn't live up to it, and that was the big difference for me.
And this is why we're called TortureCast, by the way.
Yeah, believe me, it's torture for everybody.
It's torture for everybody.
Because they don't put people away.
That's right.
And these are close games. Look, the Cubs series, one-run games.
The Tampa Bay series,
one-run games. The Marlins series here. It's been excruciating to watch such good pitching from this ball club, because this is when pitching counts.
Yeah.
August and September. You wait for this.
They're much better recently.
Yeah. You wait for these moments, but they're still making the mistakes that cost them ball games.
So do you think this year Kane's season is an aberration, just leaving the ball more in the hittable zone, because his speed has been fine. Apparently he's not injured. His home runs are up. His batting average against with balls in the zone are up. Do you think it's just his mechanics, or do you think something else sinister is going on here?
Well, he's getting a little older. He's pitched a lot of innings. And I think he has to realize that, he just can't take the ball and run out there anymore. The thing with this staff is when they miss up in the strike zone. When you miss up in the strike zone to major league hitters, things happen. He's given up a lot of home runs on pitches that are right in the strike zone. So I don't think his control was as good as it should have been. It may be the years of pitching all the innings. It may be the playoff last year. You add up his innings for the last 3 years. It's probably 250 and 240 and 250. And it takes a toll on pitchers. So I think there's a little bit of that. But the velocity is still there. But the stamina. Pitching is a game, is a profession where you better have it perfect. Because if you're 2 inches off, then the ball is 2 inches in the strike zone, it's going to be gone. So I think he's having one of those years where it's just not perfect for him.
Given Tim Lincecum's recent success, other than the start after his no-hitter, which a lot of people attribute to the pitch count, what do you think the Giants do with Lincecum next year?
I think they bring him back. I think he wants to be here. I think they want him have him here. I think the fan base wants to have him here. I think he'll be reasonable in the money. The money of baseball is so big today that they should be able to work that out. He looks like he has figured something out. Now, this, as I said on the show, the story of 2013 is still not written. Certain people have to produce over the next 2 months, which will then guide the ball club on what they have to do. He's one of them. And he's got probably 8 or 10 more starts. And if he pitches the way he has since June, then I think he has a good argument, and they'll probably bring him back. If he turns it around and gets lit up all the time and throws out of the strike zone, they may think otherwise. But if they bring him for 3 years, two of them it's a starter, maybe one is a reliever, it's probably a good investment. So I think he comes back.
So last question for you tonight. Hunter Pence has made it obvious he wants to be back with the Giants next year. He was very happy that the Giants did not trade him. He was even seen going through the clubhouse, raising his arms, saying yes. So assuming the Giants do re-sign Hunter Pence, what do you think are the one or two key things they have to do this offseason to get them back where they want to be?
Well, they have to get another hitter. They need an anchor kind of hitter. And, you talk about Giancarlo Stanton, if he ever became available. They have to go out and get another hitter, a big-time hitter, to protect Posey. Sandoval has got to come back and hit 30 home runs. Then someone like Pence can exist in the world, because he's not going to be driving the bus. He's a guy who is good. He's 270, 20 home runs, 85 RBIs. He runs like crazy. He'll strike out like crazy. And he's a good 5 or 6 hitter. But they need that one guy. If it's Sandoval, terrific. If it's not, they need somebody else. And they need to get production from first base. You can't have a first base a position where a big guy plays. And a big guy plays and a big guy hits home runs. They need a first baseman who can reach the seats. And to if it's Pill or Belt, I don't know what it's going to be, or somebody else. What do they need for next year? They need a first baseman and they need a left fielder. And they need somebody to protect that middle of the order.
Well, Marty, thank you so much for joining me tonight and taking the time to do that despite the traffic that you had going across the Bay Bridge.
Pleasure.
But just remind everybody out there, they can follow you on Twitter. It's at Baseball Marty.
Baseball Marty.
And they can also check out your website at For the Love of the Game.
It's just Love of the Game Productions with an S on the end.com.
Great. Well,
thanks,
thank you so much, Marty.
Thank
I appreciate
you.
It.
Not a problem. Thank you so much.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.